Thank you. Thank you very much. It's actually Ailey, but that's not Terry's fault. It's everyone gets it. It's spelled Ailey. So I have the unique pleasure and honor to be here and talk from a clinical perspective as a physician. I see patients 90% of my time. I don't do the research. I admire it and I like to interpret it. But I have to help leave you with some information that's going to leave you inspired, empowered. And it's a really difficult thing to do. But I'm going to give it a go, and I have a ton of slides, so I'm just going to go rapid fire. So hopefully I'll be able to cover everything that I'm trying to share with you today. So speaking of today, does everyone feel like this, right? We're all in hazmat suits or should be in hazmat suits. This is usually the first slide of all my talks because it really does, for those who are actually aware of a problem, this is what people feel like they need to wear to actually get through the world. And of course, in terms of the chemical numbers, and of course, I run through these quite a bit with people who haven't heard 10 talks already. But we do have over 90,000 compounds commercially available in this country that are synthetic. Just a handful have been tested for reproductive or neurodevelopmental toxicity. We have about 45 million pounds of synthetic chemicals that are trucked in every year to this country. 1,000 new chemicals are actually added to our list every year. 15 new polymers are patented in the US every week. And only 5 chemicals have ever been banned in this country since the passing of Toxic Substance Control Act, which was in 1976, which many of you might remember is under the Ford administration. So as an anthropology minor, and something I really believe strongly in, we've been evolving, if you believe that, in this on this world for 2.5 million years on Earth. And man-made chemicals have really been only in our lives for the past 200. And that's a lot of change for the human body to experience in such a really relatively short period of time. But we also know, and at least I know this as a clinician as well, that whether or not we develop illness or become sick or develop what's called disease really depends on several factors. We have our lifestyle, we have our genetic makeup, and we now know we have our environment. And this is over the course of a lifetime, from conception all the way to our death. And this is really described as our exposome, which is a really important term as you move forward in some of the information that we're learning here. In fact, most of the chemicals that we encounter every day, we really don't have an effect with. We don't have a rash. We don't get smacked in the face with it. These are subtle exposures. So keep that in mind. But we now know that some of these, the genetic factors are not the major cause of many of the chronic diseases that we're seeing. We're seeing that environment plays a much greater role in human illness and disease than was previously thought. So let's look at some of the facts real quick. I'm not going to go into all of these, but these are endocrine-related illnesses or diseases, right? We have infertility going up, as we heard from Dr. Swan. We hear about male deformities at birth. Testicular cancer has risen enormously over the past 20 years. Preterm birth and low birth weight across many countries. A trend towards earlier onset of breast development and puberty in girls, particular, even socioeconomically. We know there's differences amongst different cultures and races. Global rates of endocrine cancers other than testicular cancer. And of course, obesity. These epidemiologic changes, and also neurodevelopmental changes, of course. Autism is on the rise, Asperger's. These epidemiologic changes have occurred at such a rapid rate that they cannot be explained by changes in random genetic mutations alone. So something else, as Dr. Blumberg was saying, something else is going on here. But it's also critical to understand, and we've gotten information on this today, that it's not just what humans are exposed to, it's when they are exposed to it. Something that traditional toxicologists have not taken into account. All of these stages that you're seeing, they include enormous change in hormonal and physiologic change. And we also know, popular media now has gotten wind of some of these issues, right? In bits and spurts, we see it. This was the cover of Time magazine in 2010, which says how the first 9 months shape the rest of your life. So we know that since the endocrine system is so unbelievably exquisitely delicate, and it's a balanced system of glands and hormones, we know, and we're learning more about the placenta, that the placenta doesn't entirely block the chemicals that are trying to cross over it. In fact, in 2005, EWG analyzed blood of 10 random newborns and found over 287 chemicals on average in this cord blood. So we know, as one researcher says, pollution really begins in the womb. And of course, neurons are being formed in utero at the rate of 250,000 per minute on average over the course of a pregnancy. And according to this researcher at UC California, Davis, that's a lot of opportunity for things to go awry. In addition, we learned about the vulnerability, particularly in pregnancy, in both animals. Now in humans, we know that as well. And it's important to know from this information that when a pregnant mother is exposed, a human pregnant mother, three generations are exposed at once. The mother, the fetus, and the fetal ovary and fetal testes, which are the fetal germ cells. So those are the exposures all at once when a pregnant mom is exposed. And of course, children are uniquely vulnerable. I don't want to go through all of these because we have a lot of slides, but again, pound for pound, they have greater exposure. They're close to the ground. They have hand-mouth behavior. I mean, my kids used to eat everything, right, off the ground. Maybe people know that from their own experience. They have a lack of variety in their diet, which matters because different foods, as I'm going to talk about, actually make a difference in mitigating some of these exposure risks. They're continuously developing, but they also have more future years of life for exposure. So they're starting younger now than many of us did when we were children. And also, teens, this is from Medscape, which is kind of a, it made a sexy headline, but teens most susceptible to endocrine disrupting chemicals, disruption from, chemicals. And what this study, this is a really, this came out in January of last year. Leo knows the study because he was part of the study. We now know that another unique population is teens, which is why I'm actually trying to get a lot of this health information into high schools. And I can go into that another time, but this is a real drive for me. And what this study showed essentially was that boys and girls are a vulnerable subpopulation where many of the chemicals in our everyday environment, particularly thiocyanate, nitrate, and perchlorate, which come from different parts of our experience during the, you know, our lives, affect what's called the sodium iodide symporter, which is the transport into the thyroid gland. And it's very interesting because we have enormously high rates of thyroid papillary cancer now, clinically. And these are young people, and we never saw this before. So we really need to think about teenagers, as well as young children and pregnant moms, as another very important area to hit. Now, before I go into some of my recommendations, I also want to hit on the precautionary principle. This was the Wingspread statement, and we know that what we want to do is think about you know, what we do and the possibility of harm. And even if there's no formal evidence regarding the safety of a chemical or a product, if it seems reasonable, we need to avoid it as a precaution. And that's the general message. So chemical exposure, what can we do about it? Okay, what can we actually go home into our lives and actually make changes to make a difference, okay? So diet is a great place to start, right? We all have to eat. And it's a great place if you have touch points with students or healthcare professionals or patients. This is a great place to get some you know, information to people. Now we know with our diet, there's lots of different areas where contamination can get into our body, whether it's what we cook, how we clean our food, how we cook our food, and even how we store our food. They're all different mechanisms of how we get contaminants into human bodies, right? And it can be overwhelming. We do know, however, that the US diet, most of us would know, estimated that 75% of the Western diet consists of processed food. Each person consumes 8 to 10 pounds of food additives per year. And this is you know, anything from coloring and flavoring and preservatives, even chemicals that make things crunch, mouthfeel. So this is a very important issue. 1978, there were about 35 commonly used food additives. Now they're over 4,000. And it's a huge market. Dr. Maricel Maffini is a colleague, and she wrote a chapter in a textbook I'll be talking soon about. And her work was extraordinary in this area, and she's well known for her, her work in this. Now, in terms of organic versus conventional, because I talk to a lot of areas, a lot of schools where there's no organics available. There's no access, which is another big issue. We do know that there's controversy over which one's healthier, right? There's a lot of different studies that fight it out. But what we do know is that there are less residues on organic produce just by the means of and the way they are produced. Okay, so that is one important issue, and I think Leah was talking about a couple of really good studies that compared kids that were on these different diets and how it did play out in their metabolites. But if you don't have access to these foods that are organic, we can do it another way, and that has to be a message to get out there. We can have use of EWG's Dirty Dozen Clean 15, which allows people to have some control over conventional produce, right? We can also give information about using one part vinegar to three part clean water to clean off our fruit and vegetables, even sea salt, there's studies. So we do know that there's other ways to get fresh, clean produce, and I'll tell you why that's going to matter. It's going to matter because being nutrient sufficient, it turns out, helps humans to be better equipped to handle the toxin exposures that happen. And I'm going to be lecturing on this topic with Dr. Andrew Weil, if anyone knows he's a very big integrative medicine, diet, nutrition person. This topic is actually just starting to come out in terms of, you know, what studies have been done in both animal and human studies and how it can really affect how we eat so that we can protect ourselves better. So for instance, this was a study that was done showing that green leafy vegetables have folate or vitamin B9, which has been shown to offset the damaging effects, the hypomethylation, which is the epigenetic changes of bisphenol A during pregnancy. We know that iodine is a very critical component to healthy development in pregnant women, of course. It helps, you know, and we talked about the teens where we have the nitrate, thiocyanate, and perchlorate competing mechanistically with iodine. So we know that being iodine sufficient can be very helpful with having a normal, healthy birth with cognitive ability that's within normal limits of a fetus. We know that we can get iodine from food. Who knew? We don't always have to supplement. We don't always have to take medication. Who here had yogurt, cranberries, and granola today? Iodine is in Greek yogurt. It's in cranberries. It's in various seaweeds like kelp. So we know that we can get some of the things we actually need to protect us. As with lead exposure, this was a mouse study. It's a global environmental problem. As we know, it's not just in Flint, Michigan. It's in New Jersey, where I'm from. And this was a mouse study on antioxidants. And supplementing with antioxidants actually not only reduced blood lead levels in mice, but also helped maintain normal calcium, iron, and zinc absorption. We know that studies studies in humans have concluded that children that are sufficient in iron intake, calcium, and vitamin C absorb less lead, so maybe we should get them more nutritionally sufficient. We know that human studies also have shown that those who are iron deficient were more likely to absorb cadmium, which is another metal that we don't one in our bodies. And as a clinician, when I have an iron deficient patient, we know that when we have someone go on iron, for instance, we want them to take vitamin C with it because it helps them to absorb the iron more efficiently. So we're actually using it for us, and we're also can figure out a way that we can use nutrients to protect us. Quercetin, another antioxidant found, it's a flavonoid, it's found in the skin of apples and onions, helps protect against polycyclic biphenyls, PCBs, and methylmercury in animal studies. We know that there's some new studies on selenium and potentially the use of selenium with methylmercury contamination. We've seen that with fish. How about healthy fats? Omega-3 fatty acids found in chia seeds, eggs, fish, nuts can offset the toxic effects of BPA, lead, mercury, and dioxin in both human and animal studies. We also know that polyunsaturated fatty acids like omega-3 that intake has been consistently associated with lower Parkinson's disease risk. So there's a lot of information about diet and how it can be really helpful. And so it's not just avoiding harmful chemicals, which I really want to promote as well, but it's really being nutrient sufficient that really will help us prevent disease as well. So I want to give special attention to cruciferous vegetables. I'm not going to go through all of them. I didn't even know all these existed, to be honest with you, until I put it together. But cruciferous vegetables have very strong detoxification properties. So we want to tell people to eat the greens, right? These have tons of vitamin C, K, A, phytochemicals, antioxidants. But what they also contain is a sulfur-containing compound called glucosinolates and sulforaphane. Sulforaphane induces phase 2 detoxification of the liver, which promotes the breakdown, neutralization, and elimination of mutagens, of carcinogenic chemicals. So we want to eat those vegetables. And which essentially inhibits DNA methylation, which can lead to cancers. Indole-3-carbinol is another anti-cancer compound, which is very important, and it's found in cruciferous vegetables as well. That changes the ratio of so-called good to bad estrogens. It doesn't raise estrogen, it changes the ratio. So it's another good reason to take in green vegetables, cruciferous in particular. So this is a Tupperware party. I thought I'd put this in. This is an incredibly interesting age, right? We had melamine and polyethylene and naugahyde and all sorts of crazy chemicals coming out of the 1950s. We also had DDT, Teflon, saran wrap, formica, polyester, acrylic, plexiglass. I can actually put a whole song together. But we also, of course, plastic outputs increased enormously. Between 1940 and 1960, we went from 300 million to 6 billion pounds of output of plastics. Okay, and phthalates came out of this era. And we know they come in all sorts of flavors, right? Lots of different ones. Mostly DEHP has been tested. A lot of the studies are based on DEHP. We know that they're in a lot of different products, right? We saw a lot of them today, but I didn't even know that medical bags, medical tubing, very interesting studies on neonates, respiratory equipment, all of these can lead to higher levels of some of the chemicals that we're really think of only as in personal care products. Phthalates make plastic soft. It makes your nail polish not chip. It makes your hairspray not crack. It holds perfume smells longer. It preserves the smell. So that's in every perfume you can think of. I don't care how fancy they are, but that is a fact. And we have to think about ways to reduce these without telling our kids not to go in the ball thing. So, you have to work around life, right? We're all in modern day living, and we have to be able to make decisions that are not going to limit us because, you know, it's modern. So avoiding phthalates. So these are some of my recommendations, and I think several people touched on these throughout the day. You want to avoid heating and storage in plastic containers. You want to get rid of old toys. You don't want to hand-me-down toys from the neighbors down the street. Sounds ridiculous, but a lot of people do it, right? These are old toys. And the worst phthalates have been really taken out since 2007 in our market, but that's American toys. That's not overseas toys. That's not hand-me-down toys. You want to think about what you put in your home, vinyl floors, flooring, personal care products, and you want to look at this triangle on the bottom of plastics. Does anyone know what the triangles mean? Because when I learned this, it was very important. I'm sure you do, Terry. So these plastic these triangles on the bottom of plastics belong to the Plastics Resins Codes, which is designed in 1988 by the Society of Plastics Industry for recycling so that they could recoup their money, right? But we as a society can actually use them to our benefit, and I'll show you how. So PVC plastics are labeled number 3, if you can see right here. I don't know if I can do it, but anyway, number 3 underneath it says vinyl, clear food packaging, shampoo bottles. If you see a 3, you know that it's likely vinyl, PVC plastic. And we'll talk about another number in a little bit. So sources of BPA, I'm not going to belabor this, but even baby food cans have BPA in the lining, even if they were taken out of baby bottles. And we know we're still getting a lot of this from dust, from paper. And of course, there are studies that show, since BPA really has a short half-life, it's about 6 to 8 hours, it'll wash out. We know that, for instance, this study was done by Carwell's group. It was excellent, 75 people, participants, they split the group, so half were served canned food from Progresso, believe it or not, 18 ounces. The other half was served fresh soup, nothing else changed. They did 5 days of that, 2-day washout, and flipped. And it turns out that the people who were eating the canned food had a 1,221% increase in urinary BPA as compared to those who had the fresh soup. So we know that there's actually a quick change in what we can discover, so there likely is a good change if we were to change our behavior, that we're going to see lower levels. And so these are some of the ways I would recommend getting rid of some BPA in life. Buy less canned food, but give an alternative. What's the alternative? Flash frozens. Flash frozens are very good as long as you transfer the food into a glass container. Again, the microwaving issue, the heat on the bottom of the dishwasher, I say get rid of them. Glass is very accessible nowadays. And of course, look for number 7. And 7, if you go back to the Plastics Resins Codes, is under other, okay? Now, I spend way too much time in supermarkets, and I spend a lot of time looking at packaging. And it turns out I was in Walmart and I saw a ton of applesauces that all had 7s. So is that going to change your behavior? You may want to go with glass jars. We don't really know because we don't really know how much of an exposure from a glass jar cap we have. But if this is motivating people to make change, I think that this is a reasonable way to go. Now, personal care products, very broad topic, okay? This is a really broad topic. What we need to know is that there are no government regulations on ingredients in these products. And this is what teenagers don't know, most of us don't know either. But there are no regulations, no matter whether there's metal or lead, a whole host of phthalates, parabens, sulfites. So it's something to think about, and I'll tell you why. Because we now know, on average, adult women use about 12 products daily, personal care products. Teen girls use the most. And then you can actually stratify that out between African-American young girls, teens, and Asian, and different cultural backgrounds. And then men use about 6, right? So this is a really important demographic because they use the most products. It's where we can make the most difference. It's what I'm trying to do, again, by hitting high school students. This was a study in 2013, just to give you an idea. Lipstick, notorious for exceeding its acceptable daily intakes of metals. And we know it's aluminum, cadmium, mercury, titanium. And what they found with this study, they tested 32 lipsticks. Lead was detected in 24 products, which was 75%. And the FDA still has not set limits for lead in cosmetics. And we know with nail products, we have a ton of chemicals. And these are young women typically who work in these salons. And these are young people, or maybe not so young people, but people who have had a lifetime of manicures. And what we are exposed to even within these facilities, we need to think about that and maybe discuss it, especially while women are pregnant. So teen girls, this was EWG's work. In 2008, they did a study where they took 20 girls, 14 to 19, they tested their blood and urine. They tested their urine. They found on average 17 personal care products per day on average these young girls used, 174 unique chemicals. So we know that people are contaminated, right? But we also know, this is the Hermosa study, very interesting study. They took 100 Latina girls. They switched out their personal care products for safer versions over a 3-day period. And there was a dramatic reduction in urinary metabolites of specific phthalates, parabens, triclosan, which is actually a pesticide, and benzophenone 3. So we can choose better products and perhaps make really important changes in our body quality. Or body burden. Okay, so we can choose things that say phthalate-free, and we should hope that they are packaged appropriately. Fragrance, perfume, we want to avoid that. Again, phthalates hold those scents. And we can also look up on resources that are well vetted. EWG.org/skindeep. My high school students, I throw tampons to the football guys, and I throw Axe body spray to the girls, and they look this stuff up, and we come up with solutions. So you have to have some kind of working dialogue and way to get people to think and look and check things out. Air quality. Indoor environment is a haven for chemicals, of course. We spend 12 to 18 hours per day indoors, whether it's home, school, preschools. The environment is pretty toxic, given all the products we have. And we don't have a lot of airflow. Homes are energy efficient. Schools are energy efficient. Everything's sealed up and tight. Seasonally, we don't open windows. It's too cold. We know from Ruth Ann Rudell's work that endocrine disrupting chemicals are both indoor and outdoor. We know that they're pervasive. This was in 2009. But we also know that consumer product, this was a great study actually in September 2016 that showed that dust is really a big culprit in holding on to all of these chemicals that come off of everything, whether they're flame retardant chemicals, phthalates, or any number of chemicals that come off that usually end up in dust. And that's a really big issue, especially if you have children who are on the floor grabbing toys, licking them, then they stick to dust, blah, blah, blah. So you really want to think about dust as actually a particularly important hazard. So air quality tips, if we don't buy the stuff, chances are we'll get less of it in our body, right? If you don't buy plug-ins and sprays, and every time I walk into a store like Sephora or Staples and all of these chemicals hit me, if we don't buy a lot of these chemicals and bring them into our home, we're likely going to have less of an exposure to it, right? We want to avoid smoking, we want to dust more, but not with chemical wipes. We want water wipes, right? We don't want to add to the problem. And we want to choose our flooring carefully, do HEPA filters, check HVAC systems. We have ways to check filters through MERV ratings, which are how good filters are at collecting the dust that goes through them. And in terms of flame retardants, let's just say you want to buy a new couch, maybe not now. I'm on my second couch I'm trying to get rid of in 5 years. You know, we don't all have a couple grand to throw away, right? But if you're in the market for a new couch, you're a new family, a new couch in a baby's room, there's better ways to figure it out. We can actually go to, say, Green Science Policy, the work of Dr. Arlene Bloom, and we can look up the labeling now that's now on furniture, and I'm doing this now at for office furniture. You can look through and see what labels can really be helpful. And these are great examples, and you can go to her website, and I also post lists of couches from manufacturers that are now making the pledge to not have these chemicals. Pesticides. This is my kid's daycare from 7 years ago, and I took pictures and I thought I was going to get arrested, but this was the beginning of my journey in terms of how to understand all of this environmental chemical work. So we want to think about pesticides not only on our lawns, not only on our food, but what we bring into the home. So this was an incredibly interesting meta-analysis. It was 16 studies back in 2015. Oh, no. Okay, anyway, I'm going to rock and roll. But essentially, we have higher rates of blood cancers if you bring insecticides into the home. Glyphosate, big problem, no doubt. This is my home. I live with this issue, so I have to work through it. Plenty of ideas on how to reduce pesticides, okay? I can't go through all of these, but I post these on my stuff. Drinking water, big issue, contamination in a lot of different places, a lot of different issues of where toxicants can come into our lives. Only 91 chemicals covered by the Safe Drinking Water Act for public water systems. So it makes good sense to filter, fill up at home. Two more slides, three more slides. Sleep, big issue. It's not just about being rested. We have a lymphatic system around the brain that helps clear chemicals. Getting sleep matters, it really does. Plenty of sleep recommendations. Exercise and sauna, sweating matters. It infuses blood into the liver. It raises all sorts of chemicals for breakdown. Catalase, SOD, superoxide dismutase, all the free radicals. So sauna matters, exercise matters, and I would love to give attention to Dr. Davis, Deborah Davis's work on radiation. This is a big issue, and we really need to think about where we hold our technology, how we use our technology, because it does make a difference on fertility and a whole host of other issues. So plenty of good ways to reduce exposure there without taking away our phones. Take-home messages, we're there. Thank God I'm last. Chemicals and radiation are ubiquitous. There are minimal oversight in US laws. This is what got me into this area because I was just so frustrated. Chemicals can absorb through all sorts of areas in the body. And I did want to mention the anal and vaginal mucosa because we do put a lot of chemicals in there. Condoms, pesticides are on condoms. Whole bunch of information on tampons. We want to think about long-term health issues, not only what we're exposed to, but critical periods. Avoidance and lifestyle do make a difference. And we have vetted resources. We need to look forward. We need to not be angry. We have to look around in our awareness, and we need to survey our bodies, our homes, and everything that touches our body. Multiple approaches to, we heard a lot of different areas. Research, so very important. Advocacy, policy change, elected officials, you know, midterm elections, buying power, move markets. It makes a difference. If they care about the bottom line, then fine, but let's help move that market. And communication, getting to middle schools, high schools, colleges, allied health professions. I'm trying to speak to doctors and nurses. So it all really does make a difference, and every touch point matters. Resources, this is the textbook that has a lot of people that wrote chapters. Terry wrote a chapter, Dr. Swan wrote a chapter. Really interesting, important information with lots of tips if people want to take a deeper dive. And of course, this is my baby, The Smart Human, where I say Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I do posts, do videos, try to get information to everyday people, people who have no science background, no knowledge of this topic, and how to feed it in a way that doesn't create resistance, but creates empowerment. Okay, thank you so much.